plate a potential nugget.
Coming to your journey, if you had to pick three or four choices that you've made that have significantly impacted your trajectory, you know, if we just pick these 2 points, you walking away from home when you were 10 towards the unknown and you being at MIT, you know, one would assume, you know, it's difficult to think of a curve that would join these 2 points, but there is a curve. So are there three or four discrete points in the curve where the choices you made that have significantly shaped your journey thus far?
Yes, I think, you know, besides that, that particular episode of running away, the second episode of, would be, you know, despite of my aversion, agreeing to pursue both, secular studies and religious studies, simultaneously. It was, you know, it was a burden at times. You know, imagine a 12-year-old kid trying to juggle two curriculums, you know, and both in somewhat highly competitive environments. But I think when I look back, it gave me a particular set of perspectives that I do find very useful to this day. The third thing I would suggest is the opening to other religious traditions was very useful. You know, growing up in India, of course, it was natural to be exposed to so many different traditions, but the keen interest in exploring all of them and not being simply content with what I was learning on my own was very helpful to understand better human nature and how historically and otherwise various philosophical and religious traditions have approached it. And lastly, the thing around the study in the sciences and technology, which is again that making a conscious decision that I did not want to become a professor of Buddhist studies or just become a spiritual teacher in a narrowest sense of the word, or manage a temple or manage a monastery, you know, all those things have perks associated with it. There's a kind of certitude, you know, that you get with being a tenured faculty member or running a monastery and things like that. And every step of the way, encountering those opportunities, but then deciding that, no, it's okay to continue with a degree of uncertainty. You know, so it's managing ambitions to maintain sort of the clarity or purposefulness of things have been a challenge.
Wow. And is it fair to say that the current role that you have at MIT is sort of one of its kind? It's not a, you know, the Dalai Lama Center for Ethics. In a way, you've sort of sculpted the role. It's not a role that existed that you slotted into. Is that a fair observation?
That is correct. I started off at MIT almost 20 years ago, initially as a visiting scholar. I was invited by then the president of MIT, Chuck Vest, who was a wonderful scientist and a wonderful human being. And initially I started off as doing just some experimental work, because I was still a grad student, at that time. And then, they said, well, why don't you become, the Buddhist chaplain to the Institute? And again, it's one of those things that, you know, the word Buddhist chaplain was not a common thing. I don't know what a chaplain means, so I was like, okay, you know, let's try this as well. So I was a visiting scholar and then I had this role. And then, but, you know, most of my work was teaching at Sloan and other schools within MIT and working on some joint research stuff. And then you know, as I mentioned otherwise, elsewhere, that around 2007, after touring a bunch of universities around North America for lectures and speaking engagements, I realized that there was a sheer lack in the study of ethics, meaning it was simply approached as philosophy 101 kind of subject, and strictly sort of in an academic manner that with very little relevance factor. And so I started having this conversation with my colleagues at MIT at that time. And then the financial meltdown happened, and suddenly, you know, the entire world was questioning the ethics of business schools and schools of management and what's happening. And I saw that as the right moment to establish a learning center that would promote and nurture ethical imagination. And so part of the, if you ask again about the innovative stuff, it was to figure out ways of promoting ethical imagination that was not prescriptive in nature, as it had been historically, but highly relevant and highly relevant to disciplines that people were pursuing intellectually, professionally, and otherwise.
Got it. And actually, going back to one of the things you said, Venerable, early in the journey, you speak about straddling two worlds, right? Where, you know, you were spending, you went to a regular school with other kids, spending more and more time at a Buddhist temple nearby, and so on. One of the things I've discovered in several of my conversations at this podcast and otherwise is sometimes when you have to transition from one orbit to another orbit, a lot of times we take a deep plunge, but very often one has to straddle both these universes, and that comes with a burden, as you said. Could you talk a little bit about just that notion and how it's played out in your life?
Depends what day of the week it is. oftentimes I used to joke with my colleagues that I wake up quite early, around 4 a.m. or so. And between 4 a.m. and 8 a.m., I am immersed in disciplines and literature and tradition that is over 2,500 years old. And by 8:30 a.m., I'm discussing framing of artificial intelligence. So the jump happens quite often in that way. It is a burden in the sense that, you know, over a period of time, of course, there has been increased sense of proficiency. So that allows for this to be done in a seamless manner. That every day and multiple times during the day, I find myself going back and forth between traditions, end time, worldviews, and juggling these things. I think the challenge, one of the biggest struggle, of course, often becomes is the aspect of relevance, you see. Because, you know, if you take, you know, a cosmic view of the world, we are insignificant. We are less than a dot in the ever-expanding universe. And a Buddhist would know that by virtue of their meditation, by virtue of their experiences and so on. But at the same time, a Buddhist also knows the sense of uniqueness of each individual, the uniqueness of time and space that we are in, our role, our responsibilities, our sense of duty, and so on. And so it often becomes an issue of relevance, that from one perspective saying that, you know, is it really relevant? But from another perspective, it is, yes, it does matter. And it matters in these particular ways. And those are the things to think about. You know, people spend too much time bickering about shallow things. But if you are constantly waking up with reflection on mortality and reflection on death, you recognize that a lot of what we engage in, a lot of what we are invested in as individuals, as a society, is irrelevant. But we give meaning to it. We give stories to it. Sometimes those meanings are valid meanings. Other times they're just fabricated stories of sorts. And I think that's the struggle, the joy, that one has to experience.
As we think about the careers of the future, I guess more and more of us need to co-create the path for ourselves rather than conforming to a stereotype. If I take my personal example, I'm trying to marry the path of podcasting and providing leadership advisory services. Each of these is a specialist profession with several people operating in their respective domains, but I'm trying to do my bit to combine the two in the context of my journey. It's still only about 5 years and we'll see how the script plays out. But the key takeaway for me here is that future careers will feel a lot more like off-road biking on uncharted paths than racing on an autobahn.